And we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that we will be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight we've got Pete telling the story. And Pete, you've been a godsend for me the last few weeks. You've signed a lot of the alibi sheets, and I really do appreciate that. That takes a lot of burden off of what we do when we present this here. And I, for one, am dying to hear your story, and looks like we got a big crowd, so let's have it.
Good evening, all. My name is Pete, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. And remember when you were a little kid, you used to go to the doctor's office, and, you know, the doctor would say, well, you're going to get a shot, and the nurse would actually be gone only about 2 minutes getting the syringe, but it seemed like 3 hours. Okay, that's what it's like sitting there waiting for all the formalities to go through. And as I walked up here, I thought to myself, the tile's green. Oh, okay, this is like the Green Mile for me. Got it. Okay. So I'm supposed to come up here and I'm supposed to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I was thinking to myself, what it was like, how far should I go back? Should I go back to the days when I had hair? No, that'd be too long. Okay, to start off with, I grew up in a dysfunctional family. But once I left, they were just fine. Go figure. Had my first drink, which was actually a beer, at about 8 years old. Now, the thing was, when I was in school, I don't know what the problem was. I have no idea. All I know is I was an isolator right from get-go. You know, all the other kids would play baseball, basketball, something called tetherball that I'm sure none of you have heard of, all these wonderful games. And I would always want to sit off to the side, okay, because I was never very academically astute, okay, not from the word go. I didn't know it, but I had a learning disability. Okay, nobody knew it, all right? All I knew is I didn't fit in. Okay, so if I don't fit in, I'll find the other outcasts and pal around with them. And that's exactly what I did. And we had a great time together, you know? And that's where I first learned that I could belittle other people to make myself feel better than them. Okay? When I was 13 years old, I got a job in a German restaurant, the Bavarian Inn. Well, that's where I discovered the magic of beer.
Yeah.
Because you see, in Germany there is no drinking age. So in the German restaurant there was no drinking age. So I used to, you know, my father and mother would drive me to work and then I'd walk home from work because I didn't want them to see me coming in the door trashed. Okay? And then the next morning time would come to get ready for school and go to high school. I'd go ahead and I'd stick a six-pack of little buds in the front of my field jacket and my pint of Jack Daniels up here. And me and all my great friends would get toasted on the way to school. And I'd go into homeroom, you know, drunk but happy. Okay? And there was myself, a guy named Danny, and a guy named Bobby. And you know, remember that name Bobby because he's going to come up a little later on in my story. And these guys were my best friends. You know, we were the party animals. We got in our fair share of mischief. I'm not going to tell all the little stories, but a good one was, you know, my friend Bobby and I, we were out at Joseph's, which was this bar that was on Route 9 in New York in Cold Springs. Bobby meets Hank the bridge builder. And I meet this woman. Typical me, this woman, you know, didn't even get her name, knew what I wanted, but didn't want to know her name. That was just, you know, part of the theme of the day back then. And Hank the bridge builder says, let's go back to my place. I got a few cases of beer. Now, everybody is trash, okay? So Bob hops in the car with Hank the bridge builder, and I hop in the car with that lady, okay? We're tooling up Route 9, going to Hank the bridge builder's house. And Hank stops right in front of his house. Now, I'm sitting in the car with this lady, and she's going on crying and whining about, so I don't even know what she's going on about. All I know is that she's not even paying attention to where we're going. Well, Hank stops on Route 9 to go ahead and make a left turn into his house, and she just at 60 miles an hour plows into the back of Hank's car. Okay? So Bobby and I managed to get her out of the car and get her in Hank's house, and we're covered with blood, and we managed to get Hank's car off the road, and then we get her car off the road, and next thing you know, knock, knock, knock on the door. It's the sheriff, you know. "You guys know anything about an accident?" Bobby and I are standing there, "No." But we're covered in blood, you know. We got two cars totally trashed right beside us, but no. Okay. And so Bobby and I get hauled off to jail for the night, and we get to walk home. And that was a typical weekend for me. This was typical. Okay. Nothing new. Well, by the time I turned 18, my dad gave me his famous speech. And his famous speech was, "Son, you've got three choices. You can either live under my rules and pay rent, you can go to school, live under my rules, or you can get out." Well, I did this long research project because, you know, I didn't give any thought to my future. I was too busy getting drunk all the time. So I did this long research project I wanted to do for a living. I picked up my phone. "Hey, Bob, you still in the Air Force?" My brother says, "Yes." I says, "Does it suck?" He says, "No." I says, "I'm in." Click. Off to the recruiter I went. And that was my big, long decision to join the military right there. It took all of 8 seconds. Well, you know, with all of these lovely things that were happening in my life, you know, the misadventures and everything else, I thought for sure that if I joined the military, they were going to straighten me out. And I wasn't going to have an urge to pack six packs and a field jacket on the way to high school. By the way, I graduated number 349 in my class of 350 people. Never found out who number 350 was, you know? But anyway, went ahead and I figured, you know, I didn't even know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous, so I didn't know that I'd be packing up my alcoholism and my misery inside of my suitcase. Okay? Well, off I went. And of course, the basic training thing, you're not allowed to drink, you're not allowed to smoke, you're not allowed to do anything. Okay? You just get yelled at a lot. So I enjoyed getting yelled at as much as anybody else, and I figured, hey, this is something I can live with. I'm not drinking, I'm not getting in trouble. They just ask you to learn some simple things. I'll learn those simple things, and I'll be good. No problem. Well, basic training ends, and it's off to tech school. I walk in my dormitory. What's the first thing I see on my left? A beer machine. Okay, you know where I was that night throwing my quarters. Okay, sure as heck, I got good and trashed. Okay? Well, somehow I managed to lock my keys to my locker inside the locker. And being the, you know, good, calm person that I always am, I ripped the doors off and went ahead and got my keys out. And the next morning, the first sergeant comes around and does a dormitory inspection. And he says, "What happened to those doors?" And of course, leading a life of rigorous honesty, I told him that they were like that when I got there. And he said, "Have them fixed within the next 2 hours. I'll be back." So I went out, got some plastic wood, and put them back together. And the thought occurred to me that night, I'm a drunk again. Oh, well, all my friends are partying. Might as well keep up with it. So, you know, I somehow managed to get through it. I mean, there was a lot of people that washed out because, you know, we were in aircraft maintenance and, you know, we had to learn airframes, power plants, hydraulics, all this other stuff. There was a lot of washouts. I have no idea. But, you know, once again, I have no doubt. They didn't give class rankings, but if there was 25 of us, I'm willing to bet I was number 24 and we'll never find out who 25 is. So, went ahead and graduated from that. Got to my first duty station, Williams Air Force Base. Now, I'm not going to go through everything. It would take too long. But all I'm going to tell you is I was on base for about 6 months, and I went out and bought this little Yamaha 350 motorcycle, and I went over to what we called the Class 6 store, and I got me my usual Bud Tall Boys and my pint of Jack Daniels. And after getting pretty well schnocked, I decided it would be a great idea to go for a motorcycle ride on base. So I get on the motorcycle and, you know, I'm riding. I have no idea where I'm going. Okay? And I'm riding, and all of a sudden I see the blue lights. So I pull off the road. And they said, "You're going to have to come with us." And I said, "Why?" They said, "Because we think you're driving while intoxicated." And I said, "Why would you think that?" And they said, "Because you just rode across the wing commander's front yard." And I said, good clue, you know. They took me in there, and I was lucky because I only blew a .095, okay? I don't know how I did that. So believe it or not, the only thing they did was gave me a letter of reprimand and 6 months suspension driving on base. You might as well have told me, go ahead and drink some more, because that was hardly even a slap on the wrist. So I did. Then I had more misadventures, you know, a couple of times got apprehended in the Airman's Club, and a few other times got this, that, the other thing. But I did learn one very big secret that nobody even had to teach me. If every morning you take a shower and put on a fresh, clean uniform, and make sure you slap on the aftershave and do the mouthwash real good, okay? Stand in the back when they're going ahead and have us in formation in the morning so nobody can smell your breath. And then as soon as you get out to that jet, turn the oxygen on 100% and take as many deep breaths as you can, the hangover goes away. So I did that every morning. And it worked. So from there, I ended up meeting my first wife. And you talk about a situation where two wrongs don't make a right. We were both a couple of drunks. There was only two things we did well together, and one of them was drinking. Otherwise, we should have never even met. Okay? And, see, the thing is that when I met her, she was married. And then she left her husband to be with me. Then she told me she had cheated X amount of times on her first husband. But of course, my big ego, well, I'm such a great guy, she'll never cheat on me. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that worked out. But, you know, my high ego, low self-esteem told me that I was so great that she'd never run around on me. Well, the biggest reason why I married her wasn't because I loved her or liked her or anything else. You see, excuse me, I had a pretty rough time of it in New York. My dad was a pretty heavy-handed guy. Don't get me wrong, he loved us all unconditionally, but when you're on a medium salary trying to raise six boys, you know, and mama doesn't work, you know, it takes a lot. You got to keep the kids in line. So he was really good at keeping us in line, you know. I was just out to dinner just now with some friends, and we all kind of agreed that if, you know, yesteryear were today and you could get in trouble for smacking your kids, that my parents would still be in jail today, you know? That's the way we were brought up. But I wanted a payback. And that's really why when I later on did my fourth step, fifth and sixth and seventh step, found out that I married her, was I wanted to burn up my mom and dad. Okay? And it didn't have much to do with me or this woman. It was me against my parents. So, okay, get over to Germany. And, of course, Germany, that's just where a beer-drinking drunk needs to be, right? I learned about Bitburger. Boy, don't take very many Bitburgers to get schnocked. Oh, they work well. And so does every kind of schnapps they have over there, too. Okay? So, everybody viewed getting schnocked on the weekends and getting all tanked up a little bit during the week as being normal. Okay? And a couple of times the police got called to my house in base housing, but that was, you know, that was fine. You could always just explain it off somehow. And then she started doing the same thing to me that she did to her first husband. She messed around, and you know, finally I decided to cut my losses, or as some people say, thin out the herd, and let her go. And she went back to the States with a new boyfriend. And I moved into Neidenbach. And I loved living in that little village. But I think I was one of the few people that the Germans actually asked, how come you drink so much so fast? I was like, whoa. You know? That's pretty potent when the Germans are telling you this. Well, sure as heck, my isms caught up with me. And, you know, I got to say, when it comes to the silly things I did when I was drinking, this one is on the top of the chain in the stupid category. Because I was at a gas house drinking with some friends, up the road maybe 25 yards, and then down the road maybe 30 yards was my house. Parked out in front of the gas house was my car. I could have walked home in 10 minutes. Well, I have to drive. I get in the car. I hit black ice, and I put the car right into a foundation of a house. The houses in Germany are very close to, some of them are very close to the street. Wham! Well, you know, it wouldn't have bothered me too much if it just would have been me. You know, I would have taken my stupid award and wore it proudly. The problem is I had three of my German friends in the car along with two cases of beer. And they ended up with beer bottles broken in the car and the windshield busting up. And they're, you know, I come out of it perfectly healthy, and there's my German friends, you know, with glass stuck in their faces and stuff like this. And, you know, what really hit me as bizarre about that is when it was all said and done, they forgave me. You know, I couldn't believe it. I thought they'd hate me forever and write me off as the harsh look of the village, but they didn't. Okay? In the meantime, that one resulted in driving suspension and, you know, 1 year of losing my license, but luckily I was rotating back to the States in 9 months. So I didn't even have to do all of that. And back to the States I came, driving again. Okay? Got back to the States, and ex-wife and I polished it off with a nice and neat and simple divorce because she wanted to hurry up and marry her new true love, and that was fine with me. So I'm single now, and I'm going to the bars, and I'm meeting the women, and I'm having a good old time, and I'm going down. I'm now at Homestead Air Force Base, Florida, so the keys with the rum runners are looking really good, okay? And in my house, I literally had now this is how I used to think, okay? This is exactly how my best thinking was back then. My next door neighbor, two doors down, there used to be these coupon books. They were called Winn-Dixie coupons. And if you put all of, fill the whole thing with stamps, when they had a special, you could take this thing in and get a very nice deal on something. Well, the neighbor two doors down, she says, "We don't go to Winn-Dixie, we go to Publix." And I said, "Oh, okay." And so she gives me like a stack of at least 30 of these Winn-Dixie thingies filled with the stamps. Then Winn-Dixie puts Budweiser on sale, $2 a case, and one of these pieces of paper. So I went and got my 26 cases of beer, dragged it back to the house, and, you know, I thought about it, and I said, "Well, I got a whole lot of beer. Do I got any food?" And I looked at the top of the fridge, and there was one bag of Tostitos. I said, "Yep, I got food. I'm good. Let me bet." By that time, things were getting pretty bad. I could see that it was affecting me in more ways than it should. Okay? I was starting to look a lot older than I should look at, you know, 25 years old. I was looking at about 40. All right? Constantly dehydrated. Waking up in the morning and just every morning feeling like crap. Now, everybody said, "Oh yeah, well, if you just take another swig of beer or something like that, you'll feel fine." And I just never bought into that. I would just go ahead and drink water to get rid of that parched feeling in my throat, and then go through my routine with the clean uniform and the shower and the mouthwash and standing in the back during roll call, rush out to the airplane, flip the oxygen on 100%, and then be the happy camper. Okay? Now, one thing that was really good about being in Florida, it was always muggy out. So I didn't have to explain my sweats. You know, they'd see me standing there pouring sweat, and they'd say, "Oh, humid day out today, isn't it?" "Yeah, yeah, it is." So that's how I got away with that. Well, sure as heck, I met another one of my dream come true women. Okay? And she was just exactly what I was looking for, which is an absolutely beautiful woman physically, that has a heart about as empty as a post-dinner lobster tail. Okay? That was the typical Pete Berg girlfriend. And sure as heck, you know, she got out of me what she wanted. You know, some good times, a few vacations, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and then dropped me like a hot potato because she knew what I was. I was a drunk looking for arm candy. And so she fired me. And, you know, of course, in the big book, it also talks about how I would meet a woman, maybe go out on a date or two, where most normal people would say, "Okay, we're to the point where we can be friends." Not me. I'm already thinking we got a relationship, you know. That's how my bent little mind worked. So when she walked off on me, I felt like it was premarital divorce. And so I got good and drunk at her. And when I got good and drunk at her, I was at a bar in Old Cutler in Florida, Whistler's Cafe, and I got totally trashed. I mean, really totally trashed. This time I was hardly walking. And a policeman says to me, "You got somebody coming to pick you up?" And I said, "Yeah, I got a friend coming to pick me up." And this lady friend of mine comes and picks me up, and they tell my lady friend, "Well, I'm glad you came to pick him up, because we were going to lock him up just to make sure that he didn't stagger out in front of a car." So we're driving up US 1, and she tells me that the policeman said this. And I said, "Oh, really?" So she stops at the red light. I get out the car. Now I'm going across the parking lot because I'm going to tell that policeman a thing or two, because I got rights. And sure as heck, they said, "Up there he is." And I tried to hide from the cops then, but they were wise to my tricks, you know, and my tricks weren't very good when I was totally trashed. And one of the cops grabbed me by the arm, and I remember pulling my arm back and taking a good hard swing at him, okay? Well, they say when you see multiples, hit the one in the middle. There was two police officers and nobody in the middle. So my fist drilled right to that nice little rain gutter thingy that's right above the back window of the police car. So now I got this hand that's just hurting miserably. In the meantime, I'm wondering, what are these police officers laughing at so hard? They were enjoying the show. So they took me in and they put me in a jail cell. And I was okay with being in the jail cell, you know, because I realized I had screwed up pretty bad. But then they moved me to the drunk tank. I was much happier in my jail cell. The drunk tank is not a very nice place at all. My biggest memory of that thing was there was this Cuban guy. He must have weighed about 350, okay? Huge guy. And he'd roll. And if he bumped into something, he would come out of his daze long enough to punch it as hard as he could and then fall back asleep. And I mean, this guy's knuckles are skinned like you wouldn't believe. And in the meantime, the other eight or nine of us that are in there are kind of dancing around trying to stay out of his way. You know, so that's how we spent the night. Well, the woman I know comes and picks me up the next morning. And unlike the other two times I got in trouble, this time the other ones caught up with me. See, they have these new systems called computers. Those things, man, oh man. Yeah, the history was in there. They were able to look it up. So they decided they were going to put me in this thing called a 2-week alcohol awareness seminar. Now, let me tell you about the old alcohol awareness seminar. You know that part in the Big Book where it talks so much about self-awareness? And even Dr. Carl Jung, when that one gentleman went over to Europe for his alcoholism, gave him all the self-awareness that anybody could need, and the guy still went out and got drunk. That's exactly what happened to me with the 2-week self-awareness program. I had more self-awareness than I ever wanted. Okay? Didn't help a bit. But one of the things that was required in this program was that we had to go ahead and go to 3 AA meetings. Well, now, when I was in Germany after the first wife left me, I tried the religious cure. I went to this church, that church, the other church, you know, all these other things, trying to find God so that I would, you know, I could get this misery out of my life, the drinking, the ex-wife, the this, the that, all the things that I was making my own life miserable over, okay? And religious cure, needless to say, didn't work. That's why when I was reading Bill's story the first time and I heard Abby Thatcher say, "I've got religion," I said, "Oh boy, how long is this going to last?" Sure as heck, when I read, you know, the green covered book about Bill's long story is when I found out that religion didn't really work for Abby either. But, so it was off to 3 AA meetings, okay? And, yeah, I had to get my paper signed too. Alibi sheet, as some call it. So, I went to my first meeting, and I sat there and I looked at the steps, And my eyes landed directly on the word God in step three. And it was just on nothing but God. And I said, I wonder what's up with this. Then I saw the baskets going around and they're collecting money. God money? I'm back in church again. I'm out of here, you know. I still had to go to two more meetings. Second meeting I went to, there was the speaker. In the meantime, I had met this guy, Dave. Now, Dave was about 6'6" and a half. I got this thing for tall sponsors. I don't know where it comes from. But Dave was 6'6" and a half. And he says, relate, don't compare. So I sat there listening, relating but not comparing. And basically, the only difference between that speaker and I was that I had military time and they didn't. Otherwise, they told my story verbatim. Okay? Might as well have been me up there telling it. So the third meeting I went to, I picked up a white chip. Okay? And that was on January 16th of 1987. Okay? Well, my sponsor told me, he said, okay, remember, you know, I'd asked this guy Dave to be my first sponsor. He said, okay, remember, we're here for one reason, to get sober. He says, and you especially, Mr. I Want to Be a Chick Magnet, no relationships for the first year. And I said, okay, come along late February, I meet this little hottie from Argentina. So much for no relationships for the first year. Okay? Well, we're walking along Miami Beach, you know, and we've been going out now for like 3 weeks, and there's one of those little stands on Miami Beach, and they're selling that near beer stuff, whatever it's called. And she suggested we drink one of them, and just like it says in the big book, I felt in my gut that I was doing something not too smart. But I went ahead and drank one anyway. You know, that was like opening the gates at the horse track races, because I was off and running, okay? So I ended up getting all messed up and all drunk again on March 14th of 1987. On March 15th of 1987, I went and talked to my sponsor, and I told him, I says, I guess you're going to fire me because I drank. And my sponsor says, no, it's some lessons you need to learn on your own. I said, okay. So I learned that lesson, and I was good to go. And basically, that's the what it was like part. And then comes the what happened part. In the what happened part, one of the things I had to learn was I had to learn that I indeed was powerless over alcohol and my life was unmanageable. Okay? I already knew it, but I wouldn't admit it. Because I was the great and powerful Pete, and I got a handle on everything. And nobody's going to tell me anything, because I'm in the military and I'm a hero. And heroes always have good judgment. Well, I was wrong. So I admitted I was powerless over alcohol and my life was unmanageable. Now, I knew that there was a power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity, and I knew that my actions were insane. But the thing I had to get through with my sponsor was, look, I tried this religious cure thing before. My higher power didn't restore me to sanity then. Why is he going to now? And he said, because you are going to only ask for the knowledge of his will for you and the power to carry it out. What I come to find out later was that I was doing something called the prayers of the greedy child filling out their Christmas list. God, I want this. God, I don't want you to let me get drunk anymore. And if I do get drunk, I don't want you to let me drive. And if I do drive, I don't want you to let me get caught. And I want you to find out who those aliens from outer space are that are signing charge receipts and putting them in my wallet. And there was all, you know, Christmas list prayer. And didn't know that there was a difference between a Christmas list prayer and a real one. Okay? So now all of a sudden, I had to develop a relationship with the higher power. Well, the other thing that hit me is, I was brought up Roman Catholic. And back in my day, we were taught that God was the cruel and punishing God. Okay? Well, I come across in Bill's story where Ebbie Thatcher turns to him and says, why don't you develop your own conception of God? So my sponsor had me tell him what my own conception of God was. And I did. Then we came to step three. And step three really wasn't that hard. You know, make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of him. Because now I had a God I could believe in. Step four came, and I'll tell you what. The best part of step four was my sponsor telling me, Pete, once you put the pencil to the paper, it'll all come out. He said, it's just sitting down and putting the pencil to the paper that's the hard part. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but somehow he implanted this in my mind, and it became a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because as soon as I put the pencil to the paper, wham, 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 out it all came. Okay? And the way that I did my fourth step, he made some suggestions. And I said, well, what I want to do is just go ahead and write down everything, and then we'll go ahead and sort it out per the list example that's in the big book. And he said, okay. So that's what we did. Okay? Well, then he came up to me and asked me to do some additional stuff that wasn't in the big book, wasn't in the 12 and 12. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that stuff. And he says, well, if you're not going to do it, then you need to find another sponsor. And I said, okay. And we shook hands and parted as gentlemen, which was totally new to me. See, and every other time when somebody else and I parted ways, it had to be this big, hassling, monstrous event. Kind of like what Karl Marx says it takes to turn something over into pure communism, you know? The battle, the clashing of the titans. This was the first time that I ever shook hands like a gentleman with another gentleman and went in a different direction. And I got my new sponsor, John. I don't mind saying his last name because he's passed away, John Delaney. And John and I did the fifth step together. And you know, there's something wonderful about a sponsor, because a sponsor, when you get that thing right up to here that just doesn't want to come out, it seems like your sponsor's got something they did that was just as bad or a little worse that all of a sudden nominalizes what you thought was so horrible. And so doing my fifth step with John was terrific. Then we got on to one of my favorite steps, step six. Because in step six is where I was really able to analyze my behaviors, okay, and take a look at who I was and decide what needed to be changed and how to change it. We started with some simple exercises, okay, and then we just went ahead and went through and implemented those changes. Step seven, humbly asked him to remove my shortcomings, was a prayer, okay. Step eight, the list of people that I had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all, was a short list. Well, it was a long list, but the problem was that a lot of these people were in Germany, in England, all over the world. How am I going to make amends to them? And my sponsor said, well, what you're going to do is you're going to make it up in service work. So I did everything from cleaning coffee cups and ashtrays to going down to a shelter and slicing turkeys for Thanksgiving, whatever it took, you know, to try to make amends or at least do the best I can for it. Step nine came and went, and it's still, I have to remain open today, because I never know when one of those people that I owe an amends to might show up in my life. As a matter of fact, I was sitting in my little apartment down there in Homestead, Florida, and one of the guys from Germany, Ollie, he goes ahead and gets a hold of me. He says, Pete, I'm coming over. I'm on vacation. You mind if I stay at your apartment? There was one of the guys I owed an amends to from Germany, right? Who would have expected that? Steps 10, 11, and 12 I work on a continuing basis. 10, I've got my on-the-spot inventory, my daily inventory, and my periodic inventory, and I'm working another periodic inventory right now. 11, prayer and meditation. I love praying. I love hitting my knees and praying. Okay? It's just become kind of like some people enjoy solitude time. Some people enjoy reading a book. I like hitting my knees. It's great. 12-step work is the backbone, okay? For my 12-step work back then, I did some meetings at the Salvation Army. I did some meetings at some shelters, served coffee and everything else. Now, you'll notice I said that my sobriety date was March 15th of 1987. Everything's going well in AA. And to make a long story short, In 97, I retire from the military, and my lovely little place at that time in South Carolina was coming to an end because I had to move to Tennessee to go to work for FedEx. Never really got involved in AA there, so I ended up getting another job with Rockwell Collins out in California. Never really did much with AA there, okay? So we came, you know, after 9/11, that job came to an end, and I came here to Georgia. And I got here to Georgia, and I picked up my 17-year chip in March of 2004. And all of a sudden, things in my life started going haywire. My family was having some major problems. I was having to be husband, father, wife, this, that, the other thing. Okay? Now, I knew I had some problems upstairs, but I chose to ignore them. Okay? I chose to. Because I felt that my AA program had everything under control. Well, such was not the truth. Because as things got worse and worse on the home front, I went into fly or fight mode. Okay? And I wasn't going to fly on my kids. So it went straight to fight mode. Well, when we were out in the field, guess what we would do after a good fight came to an end? Go out and get drunk. So guess what I did? Headed on over to the QT down here on the corner of North Druid Hills and La Vista. Or Briarcliff and La Vista. Or Briarcliff and North Druid Hills, whatever it is. Got me the six-pack of Tall Boy Buds. On the way back, swung by the liquor store, picked me up my pint of Jack Daniels, and I was off to the races. Okay? And just like it says in the big book, I could sense that what I was doing was none too smart. Okay? Didn't pay attention to the none too smart thing. And I stayed out there for a few months and quickly realized that my misery, as advertised, had been refunded to me at the door. Okay? Because it all started coming back. And I said, I'm not going to put my kids through this. I'm not going to put myself through this. You got to be kidding. So I came back here to NABA and picked up a white chip. Okay? And that was on Valentine's Day of 2004. And in the meantime, the domestic problem that was in my life, I told the party involved that if this ever happens again, we're done because my sobriety and my serenity are a little more important than our relationship. 6 years later to the day, it happened again. But this time I did exactly what it said to do in the big book. I buried myself in service work. I buried myself with sponsees. For the past 3 years, I've been, how can I say, I don't want to say chairing, and I don't want it to sound like a, let me just say, setting up and kicking off the Saturday Night Live group, the 10 o'clock at night Saturday night candlelight meeting. And I've been doing that for a few years. And I'll tell you, there's nothing more rewarding than to turn around, to me anyway, to come in and have everything set up so that when folks come in, it looks like something that's happening intentionally, not like a meeting that was all thrown together at the last minute. It's really great, you know? And it's really great to pay the room rent on time so Frank doesn't get mad at me. I mean, it's wonderful. It really is. My sponsor tells me right now I'm looking for a job. I unfortunately was laid off because of the Delta Northwest merger. My sponsor tells me, Pete, you are exactly where you need to be. And I says, what do you mean? He says, you just, you know, fill out your resumes and stuff like that. Keep doing your Saturday Night Live meeting. Keep working with your sponsees. Maintain your serenity. Keep doing your prayers, and it'll all work out. You're a sharp guy. You got some qualifications. When God feels it's time for you to get another job, it'll come. And I'm sure it will. Hasn't yet, but, you know, I'll tell you, a miracle. When I pray for God's will for me and the power to carry it out, if I sit down and do the math, I should be living on a negative income right now. My money should be going away. I should have run out by now. I haven't. By some miracle, ends keep meeting. the balance in the checkbook stays where it is. Okay? I don't know how. I don't know why. It's not a whole lot of money, but my house isn't getting taken away. And I think that I'm going to give credit for all of that to my higher power. Now, when I came back in, and I know that, you know, remember it says, God as we understand Him. Okay, well, that pertains to all of us, so I don't mind sharing that I'm a Catholic. And I'm still a Catholic, and I'm also a Eucharistic minister, which means that I give Holy Communion along with the priest. And when I first came back in, there's this fellow named Paul. I'm sure most of you know him, Paul M. He always says his last name, but I'm not going to, because it's his anonymity. And he helped me get through the steps again. And I said, boy, I owe this guy big time. Now, because of his serenity and spirituality, I always kind of regarded Paul as a saint. You know, I mean, this guy, he's one of those guys, I think, that, you know, if my life had a tornado running through the middle of it, he'd turn it into a, by the time I was done talking to him, it had turned into a summer breeze. Okay? So here I am up there administering communion, and who comes up? Paul. And I'm saying to myself, God, not only am I totally unworthy of handling the body of your son, but I'm even more unworthy of administering it to this guy. What are we doing? And I actually talked to the priest about that one. He says, by saying that, you are worthy. And I said, ah, got a lesson in humility there. And when Paul and I were done, I got a new sponsor. And that's the sponsor I was talking about right now, just now, who says I am where I need to be. And I want to thank my sponsor, Fred, here. And I want to thank Fred, and I want to thank Thad for coming out here. Those guys from the 11 o'clock meeting, they came out here to support me during this. And all I can say is that sobriety is the most wonderful thing. And I don't care if I had 17 years, I blew it, and now I've got 6. I'm sober today. That's all that matters. Okay? That's really all that matters. I'll go home. I'll get hugs, kisses, and I love yous from my children. My own dogs won't try to chase me out of the house. That's kind of cool. There won't be a bad person from the mortgage company waiting at the front door. No. Ain't going to be any ugly notices in the mail. Bills are paid. Okay? And I'll get a good night's sleep tonight after I get on my knees and I do what I call my nightly inventory. God, if I screwed up today, let me know what I need to do to fix it or change it. And if I didn't screw up today, thank you for being graceful. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Peter. We're going to pass the baskets one more time, just in case you came in late. We're trying to do everything we can to scrape up pennies, nickels, dimes to keep Frank happy with that rent being paid on time. And by the way, I guess I must be the 350 that you were talking about. I'm thinking. So I told you about the baskets being passed. And I've asked Jay to give out the chips.
My name's Jay. I'm an alcoholic. All right. Here at this group, we use chips to mark our time in sobriety. And if you want to come join our way of life and be a member of AA, the first one's a white chip. Anybody want to come join us? No? After 30 days, it's silver. Anybody have 30 days?
All right.
Anybody else have 30 days? After 90 days, the red chip. Anybody have 90 days? 6 months. Anybody have 9 months? About 1 year or a multiple of years. Anybody having a birthday? At this group, we offer the white chip twice. If there's anybody that's a little nervous, well, congratulations on the chips you have.
Good job. Okay, it's time for AA-related announcements. Kenny? Hey, Mark. Yes, sir. See Mark by the Leaders Cabinet. And Frank?
I'm Frank. This coming weekend is the Georgia State Assembly, Service Assembly of Macon. So if you're a member of a group or a service part of the group, or just a member of it and want to know more about service, just head on down there. It didn't cost you anything. You won't be able to vote. You'll be able to sit there and go to classes. They have classes all day Saturday, along with a speaker meeting and the business meeting Sunday. So it'd be a good opportunity just to go down and see what the service structure is about.
All right. And I heard there's a good concert entertainment.
That's not a lot of reason for people to go for the
at the Capitol Theater. Yes.
I'm Ron. I'm not calling. Hey, Ron. There's a new meeting on Saturday night. This can room at 2 a.m. Greatly effective for the community support.
Okay. Thank you, Brian. We've got anybody want to make an announcement about Rock Eagle, men's or ladies?
Rock Eagle, men's Rock Eagle is going on 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th of October. There's some forms out here in the hallway. If not, I believe Mark may have some more information about that. Or you can go to mensworkshop.org and get an application off the computer. Last time I checked, there was only like 250 guys registered, and the whole 400. And there are scholarships available. So they'll have a scholarship contact person on the website there to contact them.
You will be well fed.
And the Women's Rock Eagle, it usually helps tail like a month or two after that. So I don't know. That's all I know about this.
Okay, next week we have John S., who's a member of the 12-Step Titans at Biscayne. Normally he's there on Monday nights, but he's going to be here next Monday night telling his story. And then the week after that we have Carl L. from the early morning study group here at NABA, 7:30. And so the lineup is good, and we're all glad you're here, and thanks for keeping us sober.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Can we have a couple of volunteers to help us get the room back together?
Yeah.
Thank you, Tinsley.
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Okay, thank you, Henry. All right. Okay. Okay, I guess that's it. I'd like to remind everybody that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions. They remind us to place principles before personalities, and for those who will, please join us in the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. The kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Keep coming back to the world to be worthy.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, that's it.
It's important.
Thank you.
Henry's going to sign.
I know.
All right, Henry.